Now live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Hey, welcome in everybody. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Got the band back together again.
It is a Wild West Golden Gun Monday.
Guns and Gold. You'll get that after another year of doing this. Guns and Gold. We like it in that order. You were here last Monday.
I was here.
I was stuck in traffic at this time a week ago.
You were stuck.
But you guys sounded great, so I just figured.
Yeah, we did what we can.
I didn't want to interrupt the flow at that point.
It was strikingly seamless.
It really was. It was a lot better than when I'm typically here.
Was that it? Wasn't the four-hour trip from St. Augustine to 210?
That was part of it. that was part of it.
You didn't even listen.
That gave me the opportunity to listen to you guys. I did listen to
you. You had your old man Who music on there, didn't you?
No.
Boston, little Sticks?
No. I do like Sticks a lot. I can tolerate Boston. One of the few good things to come out of the city. And I love The Who, but I listen to sports radio almost exclusively in the car. Okay. Truly. You know what I listen
especially when your show's on, I guess.
Hey, I'm working right now. This is great. This is amazing. Let's listen to me. You know what I do listen to? This is really going to make me sound old man-ish. Listen to NPR sometimes.
Yeah, my wife does that. I haven't gone quite down that road, but it's probably coming.
My wife is a big NPR fan as well, and in her car, you can't get AM. Now, you can still get 1010 on the FM,
right?
But you can't get AM in her car, so when 1010's on commercial, I'll flip over to NPR. Sometimes I get sucked into the
I feel like NPR is sort of the last. It's sort of one of those benchmarks. Once you go there, you don't go back.
Is it? Is that like you cross a certain point in your life?
Like hitting 50.
You turn in your man card
that
whatever.
That point where
it
you
is.
Flip over. I wonder what's happening on
you don't
NPR.
Go to shows. That,
right. You don't come back from
all
that
things
tunnel.
Considered. Here we go.
You don't go to shows at clubs anymore once you listen to NPR.
I haven't gone to a show. You know what? Those have a bigger gap between them for me. I stopped going to club shows a long, long time ago. So there you have it. Good weekend for you?
Good, yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Why not? We're revving up for OTAs starting up next week for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, John Osher from Jaguars.com. Fat Tony here with you today. Question of the day, a lot of talk about the Duval invasion of Tampa coming up in week 5 this year, and they've done a great job. About 1,000 people road tripping down is the last estimate I heard for Bold City Cap. 1,150, Tyler tells us right now. So even north of that, who knows where, you know, maybe 1,500 when it's all said and done.
You get 1,150 of that bunch in one spot. That's not a normal bunch now.
That's a party.
Yeah.
They're your people.
Yeah. That's not just any 1,100 people going to a place. Mike.
You are their guy, too, in some ways.
Good people.
They're going to sit right by the pirate ship.
I'm sure they are.
Which you think there's going to be a lot of visibility, you would think, for, you know, Jaguar Nation, for the folks who get that game. I'm thinking, though, Tampa-Jacksonville Week 5, probably not the national game on any of the networks out there. But
unless they get really hot really early.
Could be, right?
I'll say those fans will be unbearable at 4-0 going to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Why not? You know, uphold that suspension at least for 3 games, and we're in business.
Let's get it going.
With a good start for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A couple of home games out of the gate. So today, the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. How many road trips you planning on taking this year with the Jags? I know a lot of people listening to the show are making the road trip to Tampa. That's an easy one. But still, you know, it's cost and time and all that stuff that goes into it. It's not just an endeavor to be taken lightly. So I know a lot of people are talking about New Orleans, and certainly other division games are possibly on the agenda. How many NFL stadiums have you been to? Have you been to all of them?
I've been to all the cities, amazingly enough, except for Arizona. I've been to Arizona for owners meetings, but a team I've covered, I've traveled 19 years, and I've never covered a game that involved the Cardinals in their stadium.
So you've never had,
that's the only one.
Like, it just, schedule didn't work out that way, right?
Right, and it's sort of a fluky thing. The schedule changed in 2002, to more of a, you know, to the rotation it is now.
Right,
and I just
where you
missed
know,
it.
Right.
Right, so I haven't been to Dallas's new stadium. I'm not sure the exact list. It would get pretty boring if we went through everyone. But I've been to all the cities
most
except for Arizona.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them. Arizona's an okay stadium. I thought it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know? Nothing.
I think that and Dallas are the only ones I haven't been to that are in existence now.
So we'll talk about that a little bit today. What road trips are folks taking? You can share your thoughts with us on that. And what's your favorite Jaguar road trip maybe that you've ever taken as well, or a consistent one that you like to go to year after year? Indy is so easy to navigate, you
been
know,
there a few
just
times.
For sports. You have, yeah. I know. I understand on both sides of the fence, the bad and the good.
Bad and the good.
But I know.
Fair to call it that.
You know, Nashville's a super easy trip as well. That's a, you know, direct flight in and direct flight out. You can get
and
back.
And a great. A great viewing experience in Nashville. I mean, good place to see a game.
It's a great place, particularly
good
for the
pre-game.
Press. The press is fantastic.
Yeah, press is the best.
They got us sitting down practically on top of the field, so it seems, which offsets the worst food, press box food in the league that I've come across. I haven't been to a mall.
Yeah, I've been to worse.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Give me one. Just give me one that's worse. I've been to about 20
well, the new,
NFL stadiums. And
like
I have,
Cincinnati used to be horrendous, and now it's really good. Like in Old Riverfront, Cincinnati was hot dogs and
not
Dolly
that
Madison
Skyline
cakes.
Chili.
Yeah, you know, the Skyline Chili mixed in. It was bad, but they've improved tremendously.
nothing worse. Come on. Seriously, Tennessee is serving runny eggs at like 1 in the afternoon.
It's not even mine, Tennessee's.
Ah, all right, you're a fan of the runny egg.
Yeah. It seems like they always have like a little option on the side. I don't mind as long as you got an option on the side.
Not a big fan, but regardless, we'll talk about that a little bit today. James Sample coming up on the show today. Got a chance to talk to him after the show on Friday. Looks like a strong safety. Needs to play like a free safety, obviously. How big of a concern is that position? You got a rookie coming in, fourth round pick. You typically don't expect those guys in the NFL to step in and be ready to go right away. Jonathan Cyprian has been okay, but not great at the other spot. And Sergio Brown just hasn't started many games in the National Football League. I think we know Josh Evans best suited in a backup role. How big of a concern is that spot on the back line of the defense right now?
Well, I think if you've watched their moves, it's obvious that they're concerned about it. And they've tried to address it in really the best way they could. They went after Devin McCourty. They tried that. Barring that, I think had the free safety class been better in the draft, I think they would have gone after it in the draft. I think they looked at the draft and looked at free agency and realized, okay, this is not a situation where we're going to be able to go get a first round Pro Bowl talent. Perception-wise, now that's not saying Sergio Brown and not James Sample can't do that, but the perception of those guys is not that they're Pro Bowl first-round levels. So they tried to go get it in the best way they could with what was available on the market this year, and they addressed it. Sergio Brown has ability there. If he would wind up not being the starter, he can give them things on special teams. And James Sample is a guy who, when you look at him closely, potentially could fill the free safety role, has potential to do it. There are traits that he has. There are reasons that you can see that he didn't do it in college. So these are two guys who at least have a chance to do it. So they filled it the best they could, but it's a concern.
I get the sense from talking to Dave Caldwell, as much as he raves about Sergio Brown on special teams, that he's going to be part of that regardless.
Okay.
Right? I mean, and you don't want to overextend your starters, but if a guy's that good, I mean, there are big-time teams out there. Seattle uses Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman on special teams.
I think there's any question they want to get better on special teams. They want to feel like they're more reliable, and they want to give that unit, talent-wise, a fairer chance to be good.
All right, today, so we will hear from James Sample coming up towards the bottom of the hour here on Jaguars Today. Also, we'll check in on the Tom Coughlin charity golf tournament for the J Fund going on out at Sawgrass this morning. A lot of luminaries out there, as there are every year. coming into town. And we'll take your calls and texts at 641-1010. You can call us on that number or text us, same number, on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Question of the day today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. How many road trips you taken and which ones for Jaguar games in 2015? It is a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. We're just getting started here live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today live at Everbank Field, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. You want to get on board, 641-1010. The phone number, also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, same number, 641-1010. Question of the day, how many Jaguar game road trips will you take this year? You can count London if you want to. It's technically a home game. That's a road trip for just about everybody. However, unless you actually live in London itself, I'm going
to
count that as
and pretty close to Wembley. I mean, it's a haul to get to Wembley from anything outside London. I mean, I talked to a lot of fans when we go over there, and they always sort of remind me, hey, it's, you know, just because you live in Europe doesn't mean this is a home game for us. It's a haul to get there from a lot of the places that the people, that the Jaguars fans who go to the game come from.
Sure. I mean, just think about it, you could have a game in Miami. It's still in the state of Florida.
Right.
That's the same state. That's still,
well, I'm one of those guys.
It's still a good trip.
If it's across the season on the map, it's all pretty much the same place.
From here, right, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. From London.
Yeah, it's all Britain.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Denmark.
But I'm not
Germany.
That bright. Don't use me as a role model.
No. We're the ugly Americans in the group. So you can certainly weigh in on that. I was looking at a story on ESPN.com, actually off of Scouts, Inc., and they were talking about who they thought were the leading candidates for Offensive Rookie of the Year in the National Football League. I think T.J. Yeldon has a decent chance to be in the mix simply because of how much they're going to use him this year. I mean, Dave Caldwell said that, you know, they'd like to get him 16 carries a game on average. Some games he'll probably get 20. Some games he might get 12, whatever. But, you know, it works out to 256 carries. Figure he's going to catch the ball 30 or 40 times if he's, you know, on the field that much. So close to 300 touches for him this year with hopefully an improved offensive line. Hopefully an improved passing attack to not allow teams to focus with nine guys in the box consistently.
Right.
I think opportunity is a big part of this whole equation.
For Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right? I mean, so to me, I look at some guys, and I understand why you might say Melvin Gordon, right? You just may think he's a better player. You think he's in a better overall offense, all those things. But I think Yeldon, certainly just based on the volume, has a great chance to be in the mix. I mean, is that kind of what you envision? You envision a guy who's going to be like a 300-touch guy, and Denard Robinson and Toby Gerhart become what to you at that point?
Well, first of all, on the Offensive Rookie of the Year, anytime you've got a rookie running back who's starting, he's probably going to be in the mix because he's going to get the ball, you would think, more than most rookie wide receivers will, and it's usually an easier transition for a rookie running back. And there's no question that the Jaguars want somebody to step up and take that role that they thought that Gerhart was going to take last year. This time last year, we were talking about Gerhart maybe being an 1,100-yard guy because they were planning on using him in that way. Well, the same plan is now true for Yeldon. So, yes, if all goes according to plan, he's going to be in the mix, and he's going to be one of those top four or five rookie running backs because the pool is relatively low. Denard, I think, will go back. I think he's got a chance to be more of the offensive weapon, which I hate to use that phrase, but for lack of a better word, more of the role they envision for him as a rookie, which I think is okay. I think he can make an impact. He's the kind of guy who can make an impact with the ball in his hand five or six times, where some runners need a lot of carries to get going. I think Denard has the speed and the big playability that he could potentially make a huge impact only touching the ball three times a game because he's that kind of dynamic playmaker.
So where does that leave Gerhart?
As the short yardage running back, third down, catch the ball out of the backfield. I think a lot of the things he started to do at the end of last year when he was healthy, when they found out sort of what he could do and what he could bring to the table. And I think he can do that. I don't think he's going to be the lead blocking fullback. There was a little gurgling.
I don't either. Yeah.
But, I mean, that was a thing for a while, was that he was going to move to fullback. He was a power guy. I don't think he's that, but I think he can have that, you know, for lack of a better term. I think Dave Caldwell used this comparison at the owners' meetings. Maybe a West Coast offense kind of fullback in some roles when they use that sort of package.
Kind of catch the ball a little bit more. That, to me, is more like...
But he made some plays last year in that role.
Oh, he did. And look, he made plays in that role in Minnesota, mm-hmm. More as just a pure third down back, coming in and catching the football on third down and, you know, rushing. His rushing average inflated. When you come in and you're primarily getting touches on third down,
sure.
You're in third and long, they'll give up that 8-yard run on third and 12. But... You think you said goal line back or short yardage back? Do you think he is that guy? I mean, when they line up, when they punch the ball down to the 1-yard line, is T.J. Yeldon getting the call or is Toby Gerhardt getting the call?
Good question.
Well, what do you think? There's my phone. Party foul. Nearly going right here.
Oh, you too for you.
No, actually. No? It sounds like where the streets have no name, right?
It does.
That's just your standard Sprint Android. Or I don't know what I have Verizon. Sprint,
I'm not sure YouTube's gonna be very happy about it.
Yeah, they might not. It's very similar. It was very similar right there. So
you might have started
aside.
Something right here. You know, I would guess they start off trying Gerhardt in that role and seeing how he does in it. But as you say, I don't know that he's your classic, you know, Christian Okoye power running back guy. Which, you know, to use a name, is a blast from the past. But he did have some effectiveness in that role last year, so you would think they would try to work him in that a little bit.
As the season went on,
but that's
very much
a guess.
I thought he had better power runs. I think everybody did. You know, mm-hmm. You could see a little bit of that, like breaking tackles, carrying guys that you expect to turn a 1-yard gain into a 3 or 4
right.
yard gain kind of situation.
And a lot of it is we don't quite know yet the intricacies and the details of exactly what Greg Olsen's offense is going to want from some of these guys we're talking about. I think that's what we'll find out, maybe not in the next few weeks, but during the preseason, early season.
This article, as I mentioned, done by Scouts, Inc., I guess a branch, a subsidiary now of ESPN, I believe. They own
what is
Scouts, Inc. I don't know. but Kevin Weidel did the story. So it's just one guy's opinion, obviously. Here are his top five guys he projects to have a shot to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, starting with Jameis Winston of the Buccaneers. I've heard a lot of people have mixed reviews. I think Winston's going to come in and play pretty well right away when you consider the weapons that he has in Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, Austin Seferian Jenkins. He's got three guys, 6'3 to 6'5, reminiscent of Kelvin Benjamin, what he had so much success throwing to a couple of years ago. And he's got a good receiving back in Charles Sims coming out. They draft Kenny Bell out of Nebraska. He's got a lot of pieces in place, and they're going to give him every
right.
opportunity. It's not going to be
it's
one of these.
Every opportunity part that's
right,
the key to it.
Right. It's not
right.
like Blake last year. They said, all right, we'll take him third overall. Going to have to bring him along. There's no bringing Winston along. He'll have his growing pains, but he's going to be given the whole playbook and thrown to the wolves from day one.
Tampa's offensive line, I think, will have to get a lot better for him to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. But, as you say, he'll get every opportunity, and I think it would be a little surprising if a rookie quarterback drafted number one overall won that. It can be very difficult, and I think it would be a learning curve
just
for
him. Just because what? Because of the expectations, or because you're going to a team that has obvious flaws if they earn the number one pick?
Correct. Second.
The second.
Yes.
The latter. All right, so he was Winston's number one.
I think there's a big learning curve for a rookie quarterback that you would think there'll be enough mistakes that it'd be tough to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
And it certainly could be a situation like that. It could be like a 20-20 guy, you could see. Touchdown to
right.
interception ratio of 1-1, something like that. I guess we'll watch it all play out. Nelson Aguilar of Philly. I thought this was an interesting pick. The wide receiver out of USC. I think he's an outstanding fit, and I think any player going into that offense has a chance to put up big offensive numbers simply because of the pace of play. They want to get more snaps off, so you're going to have more snaps on offense.
And it stands to reason that it's a Chip Kelly offense, so it's at least going to be functional and probably will start off you won't have the learning curve around him on offense that they will in Tampa. And that's the reason I think that about Jameis Winston. I look back maybe in 98, Peyton Manning had a decent rookie year, had more interceptions than touchdowns. We had enough touchdowns.
We had a lot
of touchdowns for that
too.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
But Fred Taylor, Randy Moss, who were on better teams, had huge years that year. I think I'm getting the years right. 98 was when they all came out. So that's why it's tough for a rookie quarterback taking number one, is the team around him is usually not going to be as good as the team around a rookie taken later in the first round who has a chance to make an impact at another position.
26 and 28, I think. Was that the TD?
Sounds right, yeah.
Something in that ballpark,
yes.
Right? As far as that goes. You get to Melvin Gordon coming up next, as I said. I think a lot of people are going to pick him.
Sure.
As offensive rookie of the year. For one thing, he comes in healthy, at least at this point in time. I think the big knock in some people's eyes on Melvin Gordon is this school he went to and the recent track record with guys like Ron Dayne and Monte Ball. They're different kinds of runners, though, I think. I don't think that those guys were nearly as explosive
right.
as Melvin Gordon. I think he comes into a decent enough situation. Obviously, having a quarterback that teams have to respect with defensively when they game plan for him, it's not going to be all throw everybody in there to stop Melvin Gordon from day one.
Yeah, it's a huge factor. If I'm game planning for San Diego, I'm still significantly more concerned about Phillip Rivers, who I think's a top 6-7 quarterback, than I am Melvin Gordon.
Obviously, I don't think it's the same situation or even close in St. Louis, where you got Nick Foles there now, who's had some success, but he had that success in that system that you were talking about with Chip Kelly. Todd Gurley was the fourth pick here to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, even acknowledging, they said, that he's unlikely, in their opinion, to be ready in time to start the season, but they hearkened back to last year when Odell Beckham Jr. didn't play the first four games. It's a little bit different. I mean, if Gurley goes on the PUP to start the season, he's out the first six games of the year.
Yes, at least.
Right. So at least the first six. Well, let's say he is ready sure. to go and for the final 10 games of the season. Is he going to be able to come in right away and do enough in those final 10 games to give himself that kind of recognition? Particularly, is that offense going to do enough to give enough of a credible threat to defensive coordinators to not focus all their attention on Todd Gurley at that point? And when he's ready to play, how well has Trey Mason been playing for those first 6 weeks of the season? Right. And how much of the load do you want to give Gurley early on in his career?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule Gurley out of that conversation, but I probably, considering the circumstances you just laid out, probably would not put him over Yeldon.
If he had a healthy knee, 100% healthy knee, never had this ACL to deal with, and he still went in the draft, played out the same way, I'd probably pick him number one because I think he's that talented.
Well, yeah.
But he obviously doesn't, right?
Right. Even that's a big
if. But obviously, yeah. But even with the circumstances of, you know, the players around him in St. Louis, mm-hmm. not exactly striking fear in the hearts of a lot of people.
But you do know that history tells you that Jeff Fisher, given an elite back, is going to figure out a way to use him. May not necessarily mean the team is a 12-4 team, but you would think that Jeff Fisher is going to figure out a way to utilize Todd Gurley enough to get huge numbers.
That's right. Jeff Fisher's had plenty of 7-9, 8-8s over the years.
Right.
You know, so he ought to be used to that, getting big running back numbers. And then finally, the last one, he said a bit of a wild card pick, Breshad Perriman with the Baltimore Ravens. I think he's a good fit because he's a guy that has speed, and Flacco's got a big arm. I just can't see enough balls coming Breshad Perriman's way. Torrey Smith, a much more accomplished right. guy, caught 49 passes last year. Now, he did score 12 touchdowns catching those 49 balls, but
I personally, this is probably the last time I'll think about Offensive Rookie of the Year until it's awarded next year.
Until T.J. Yeldon gets it?
Right, until I'm writing the T.J. Yeldon story. But I think Breshad Perriman has a real chance to maybe make the biggest impact in January out of all these players we're talking about. Because you could easily see the Ravens are always a team that's right there. You could easily see a player like him being that extra weapon that they need in a huge game in January, sure. But I don't know that the offensive numbers, the huge stats are going to outweigh one of these running backs enough to be Offensive Rookie of the Year if you care about Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I think Amari Cooper.
Obviously, you do.
On May 18th, I absolutely care enough, 10 minutes worth.
I'm caring right now, too.
For Offensive Rookie of the Year. You better care, pal. I think Amari Cooper is a candidate to catch the most passes, but with Derek Carr throwing him, I don't know exactly what that'll amount to. You know, right. he averaged like 5.5 yards an attempt last year, which is really poor. As we know by NFL standards.
Of course,
standards.
The idea behind drafting Cooper is to get that up.
Obviously it is. And it can
still
come
up. Football 101 for you.
Right,
Mike.
But they had James Jones last year, for instance. James Jones in his career had never averaged less than 13 yards a catch. And Derek Carr comes in, and that fell to 9.1 last year. So, you know, you had a guy who was established putting up pretty decent numbers for a guy who's not known as a speedster.
You sound like a bitter fantasy owner. You had him.
No, I'm not actually. He outperformed expectations last year. And you know, Kevin White's got Crazy Cutler thrown to him, and as long as he keeps the starting job, I think he's a candidate to put up better numbers than Rashad Perryman there.
Sure.
Too. So we'll see. But no love for T.J. Yeldon yet. We'll see if that changes as the opportunity comes along.
I don't get the no love for T.J. Yeldon. Like all the running backs that you mentioned there, I think there's a bigger possibility for Yeldon to be more a part of this offense than any of those other runners are going to be in their offense. Look, Danny Woodhead's coming off a major injury, right? But they love what Danny Woodhead gives him when he's on the field there in San Diego. You mentioned Trey Mason there in St. Louis. There's the potential that if T.J. Yeldon shows up early and shows that he can handle 20 carries a game, that he's getting that every week.
It's going to be an upset if he doesn't.
Right, and I don't know that any of those other guys, I look at him and say, that's definitely 20 carries a game.
Granted, and I agree with you that Woodhead's the
biggest
impediment.
They'll probably be more successful. Their teams will probably be more successful.
But also, Tony, if the overall offense is probably what they're looking at. If they think the San Diego offense is going to be more successful, Melvin Gordon may have a lot of opportunities to run for short touchdowns.
Sure.
You know, and win those kind of stats in that regard. I think that's part of it. They look at last year and they say, you know, sketchy offensive line, rookie quarterback who was the lowest rated guy in the league, unproven wide receiver core. And a lot of that is still true. We have Blake Bortles yet to prove what he's going to be. Got a lot of young receivers.
You have to be pretty intimately involved and aware of what's going on with the Jaguars to project a rookie running back having huge success here. And by that, I mean, we all see a lot of reasons, a lot of things that have happened, new right tackle, new tight end. When you're doing one of these stories like this story is being done, you don't have quite as much of a feel for all 32 teams as we do for one team. So it's a little tricky to try to project a Jaguars rookie to be offensive player of the year, considering, or offensive rookie of the year, considering the last 3 years of offense around this team.
Oh, there's no question.
So I get why the story is written.
And how much they struggled running the football. But look, if he does get that, he's got to stay healthy to get all those carries. But if he does get 250 carries, you know, it's simple math. He averaged 4.0 yards per carry, which is not outstanding in the National Football League.
No.
You know, 4.1, 4.2, very reasonable. Mm-hmm. I think if you're worth a top 40 pick, you should come in and be expected to produce those kind of numbers.
Sure.
If they're at all competent, right? Which I think we feel like they've upgraded pretty significantly, at least the competition on the offensive line.
Yes.
You know, you got an excellent chance to, without doing anything special, to be 1,100 yard rusher right out of the gate. So we'll see if that comes to pass. Coming up in a moment, James Sample, got a chance to sit down with him last Friday here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios, and we'll have that conversation coming up for you on the other side. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. Mike Dempsey, John Osier of Jaguars.com, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. The Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, from revolvers to sporting arms, everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold meets or beats any gun shop's price in the United States of America, and they guarantee that for you. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com. Or visit Wild West on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777. That's 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. A couple of things, Tony. I just feel like, you know, I want the Deflategate thing to be over, but what I understand is going to play out. It is a big NFL story, but I, like many, are tired of hearing the term and just let's be done with it. The investigation's done. The Patriots have issued a response. Now let's see where the appeal ends up landing and whether or not this thing actually goes to court. But Robert Kraft did talk to Peter King in his Monday Morning Quarterback column today, and obviously from the tone of it, quite upset with what's going on. We're not surprised there. When asked about his relationship with Roger Goodell, who they were extremely close, everyone felt one of the biggest supporters Goodell had, maybe the biggest, was Robert Kraft.
Yep.
Said you're going to have to ask Goodell about that. and wouldn't elaborate any further. I did think it was interesting. There were a few things he wouldn't comment on. And he may not have decided yet, or he may want to, you know, let the process play out a little bit more, such as whether he's going to take the league to court to overturn these penalties. But the one question, John Jastrzemski and Jim McNally, the two Patriot employees that were deemed to be directly responsible for doing the deflating of footballs by Ted Wells, he said, well, if you so vigorously defended their actions and intents in your 20,000-word rebuttal of the Wells report, then why did you suspend them without pay? So if you believe they didn't do anything wrong, or do you believe they may have done something wrong and it was without the knowledge of sacred Tom Brady? Or is that the way you're playing it? And he said he wouldn't comment for a variety of reasons. So that's one I definitely want the answer to. If you don't think anybody did anything wrong, why did you suspend your own employees without pay pending any appeals that are going to play out in this matter? So check it out in the Monday Morning Quarterback if you want more info on that. All right, right now, had a chance last Friday to catch up with the Jaguars' fourth-round pick from the 2015 draft. James Sample coming in to compete for that free safety spot. He looks like a strong safety, I'll tell you that. He played strong safety in his 1 year at Louisville as well, but had a chance to sit down and get to know him a little bit last Friday. All right, Jaguars today getting a chance to catch up with James Sample, fourth-round draft pick of your Jacksonville Jaguars out of the University of Louisville, coming in to play safety. The question is, which safety spot? We think we know. Let's talk with James and find out. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing good, man.
Welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you.
What's it been like? I mean, it's been, a week, right? 2 weeks. Has it been a whirlwind for you since you got drafted? What's the whole experience been like?
It's been a little bit of a whirlwind, you know, just coming in and just being with a bunch of different rookies from different colleges. And then after the cuts, getting with the vets and trying to learn as much as possible and stuff. It's been crazy.
Do you get a break? I mean, from the end of the season, when your season ends, you wrap up the bowl game. You're preparing, right? You're getting ready for the combine. You're preparing to get yourself drafted as highly as possible. How much downtime have you really had since the end of the college season?
Not too much, because right after our bowl game, you start finding out who you want to be your agent, and then you're still working out on your own until you find out where you want to work out. And then after you find out who's your agent, then you got to pick the spot. I chose to stay back home in California and train. And then you just preparing for the combine for a couple months. Then after the combine, you get ready for your pro day. And then after pro day, you got to get ready for a rookie minicamp. So it's a nonstop grind.
It's going, man. You know, and obviously, you know, you'll get used to it. You've got those young legs out there. And we'll talk about your experience at minicamp with the Jags. But I want to go back to college. Bob Petrino comes in. He's more of an offensive-minded guy. For you, does it matter that much, or does it matter more what your position coaches are dealing with you on a day-to-day basis?
Coach Petrino, he hired some good people. Todd Grantham, our defensive coordinator, he was a real good dude, and he taught us a lot, and it was a pro-style defense, so I feel like he got us prepared for all the defensive players coming out last year to play in a pro-style defense.
You guys were loaded at Louisville, weren't you?
Yeah, we had a good group of guys.
Good group. I mean, I'm a Florida State fan. I remember watching you guys play. You guys on that day had to feel like the way you played, you're the better team on the field that day.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going up against a lot of guys that you knew were going to get drafted. Obviously, you looked around. You had to feel that Louisville prepared you very well for the transition to the NFL, I would think.
Yeah, I think so.
When throughout the process, as you're being courted by teams and interviewing them, did you have a sense that the Jaguars were interested in drafting you?
Yeah, I got a sense from Rudy. Just talking to him at my pro day, I got a good feel of how they coached and stuff. And then he just really talked me through the process of, like, certain things you can control, and then there's things that you can't control. So don't get worked up about it. So that really helped me relax for the pro day.
What did you do for draft weekend? How did you spend that time? Were you watching every pick come off the board, or did you try to get away from it a little bit?
No, I was watching every pick because I had my teammates. I wanted to see where they went, and then I had some guys that I played in high school with against, so I wanted to see where everybody went. So I was just chilling with my family back home in California, and I was just watching it.
Jaguar safety James Sample here with us. Give us a scouting report on you. Give me what you think your biggest strengths are as you make the transition to the NFL, and what are the areas of your game you'd like to see some improvement in?
Biggest strength is coming downhill, making tackles. That's one of my best assets. And then I'm just a physical and tough player. And then some of the things I probably need to work on is just vision, get in depth when I'm in the middle of the field, but overall, that's them things that I know I can improve on, and I'll be a better player.
What did the Jags talk to you about in terms of do they envision you as a free safety, as a strong safety, and how in this defense, from your understanding of it being here just a short time, how similar are those two positions here in the Gus Bradley defense?
Right now they're looking at me as a free safety. The free safety and strong safety, you got to pretty much know both roles. But right now they just really getting on me about the free safety spot. They don't want to overload me, overwhelm me. So for now, I'll be just playing as a free safety.
You feel it's a good fit for you?
Oh, yeah, I feel like it's a good fit because at first I thought as a free safety, you just in the middle of the field. But free safety come down a lot in this defense.
You're a big physical guy. We've seen you out there at rookie minicamp. Obviously, it had to be a shock to everybody to see Dante Fowler Jr. go down on the first day of minicamp. But for you and guys like T.J. Yeldon, A.J. Cann, getting your first chance to be out there with some of your new teammates, what was the experience like just to get your feet wet?
It was cool. You know, for the last couple of months, I've been doing combine work and pro day work, and it just felt good to get back to the basics and run around and compete against everybody.
Did you know much about Coach Bradley before you got here to Jacksonville?
Nah, not too much. I just known a little bit from the combine when I met with him.
He's excited.
Yeah. He's a guy with a lot of energy, and I like that. You come into the meeting rooms, and you know that he's not going to be lazy or nothing. You know he's got a lot of energy, and he's always I like that he's a very positive dude.
He is a positive guy. He's a straight shooter. I think players really, even if it's bad news, as long as you're giving it to him straight, I think I've heard that many times over the years, as long as the coach is dealing with you, you know, on the level, that's one of the main things you guys look for, right?
Yes, sir.
Hopefully you get a chance to get in here, show your skills at the free safety spot. What are you going to be doing between now and OTAs?
Just cracking down in my playbook, trying to watch film and learn more, and then this weekend probably go see the city a little bit more since I got a car to drive around in, so that's probably what I'm going to do.
I heard you were going to buy your dad a car, right? That's like one of the first things you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm going to do when I get my signing bonus.
Take care of Pops, yeah. Man. That's a good way to go. Now, and on your downtime, where might Jag fans see? What kind of things do you like to get into?
I might go check out the beach and go bowling or hit up the town center. I tweeted something and asked what's the best spots, and they said the town center is pretty cool.
All right, well, it's not, you know, the most diverse metropolitan area, but we love it here. We think you're going to learn to love it here in Jacksonville as well. We're glad you're here, man, and we wish you the best of luck. Look forward to a lot of big plays in your future coming up very soon.
Yeah, thank you.
You got it. James Sample out of Louisville, now a member of your Jacksonville Jaguars, here with us on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And trying to give you an opportunity to learn a little bit more about your draft class. We'll have more of the rookies coming in as they get signed. Michael Bennett, the latest to get signed. So T.J. Yeldon, A.J. Cann, Rashad Greene, by my count, the remaining guys for the Jags. 75% of all NFL draft picks already under contract. The times have definitely changed in that regard. All right, coming up here on the Wild West Guns of Gold Monday, we've got this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. What do we got going on in this date in football history? Not a whole heck of a lot, but a few notable players were born on this date. I don't know if you'd consider Orlandis Gary notable. He always sticks out in my head as an interesting case study for a number of reasons. Back when Mike Shanahan was coaching the Denver Broncos and Gary Kubiak was the offense coordinator, they could throw any running back seemingly in there. He'd run for 1,000 yards. Terrell Davis got hurt in 1999. Gary goes out there, rushes for over 1,100. And then Terrell Davis gets hurt in the first half of the opener in 2000. In comes Gary, who over the course of the first and second halves runs 13 times for 80 yards. We find out that he had torn his ACL in the second quarter of that game and still played very well on it in the second half. But then enter Mike Anderson, the former Marine, wasn't he? A Marine, like a 25-year-old rookie, and ran for over 1,400 yards that year. So Orlandis Gary, born on 1975 on this date, 40 years young today. You mentioned earlier, John, with Peyton Manning throwing all the interceptions, tough for a quarterback to win Rookie of the Year. Vince Young won Associated Press Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And he was something like 12 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, but he ran for 7 TDs that year. Maurice Jones-Drew felt like he got it robbed in that one. I think Reggie Bush was
probably
the
did.
Other finalist in that. He probably did, right, all things considered. So Vince Young, by the way, 2 Pro Bowls. And
wait, Maurice felt like he got robbed?
I know. Shocking. Shocking. Maurice Jones-Drew, new to Facebook. Maurice Jones-Drew, by the way. If you haven't gotten a friend request from Maurice, like,
wait.
You're not living, okay? Because it's coming.
Just wait.
It's coming. 50 games as a starter in the National Football League. What is Vince Young's record?
Probably 27-23.
What you got, Tony?
I was going to guess 28-22.
31-19. Not a great statistical quarterback, but he won a bunch of games. Yeah. You know, so there you have it. And also born in this date in 1990, Robert Quinn, St. Louis Rams, going into his fifth season, three double-digit sack years in his first four. And last year, how nice would it be to have a disappointing 10.5 sack season
here,
right? I mean, coming off 19 the year before.
Everyone's going, pick it up.
Right, I could see why that was disappointing, but nonetheless, it's his third consecutive double-digit sack year, 45 sacks in the first four seasons, two-time Pro Bowler already, and one of those years he was a first-team All-Pro. That was a couple seasons ago with those 19 sacks. So that's what happened on this date in football history, brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, fabricating and installing the highest quality fencing products at a competitive price and giving you unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Pete Carroll responded over the weekend to the comments of Bruce Irvin last week, saying that he will be in Atlanta next season, not Seattle. Here's Carroll's response from Saturday. Quote, I'm really glad you asked me that because he didn't say that. We've been talking all along. He has been working out in Atlanta for these 3 weeks, and he said that in response to a question, do you want to come back home? He said everybody likes to come back home, and it's a dream to come back home. It wasn't in reference to leaving us and coming back to the Falcons. He was really adamant about it, and I asked him to leave it and not go at it anymore. Baltimore Ravens tight end Dennis Pitta is expected to start the season on the PUP list for the team. Pitta has now had multiple hip surgeries, and there are serious questions about whether he can or should attempt to play football anymore. The Ravens did draft tight end Max Williams in the second round this year to address that need, and the New England Patriots and free agent linebacker Brandon Spikes are reportedly reuniting after 1 year apart for a one-year deal for the middle linebacker to come back to New England.
Ah, yes. Okay. Fascinating. That'll cover up for any absence of Tom Brady in the first month of the season.
I'm sure it will.
More hard-hitting two-down thumping from Brandon Spikes. I see the tweet. I'm sure you did, Tony. It was directed to both of us at PPotvan6199. He showed us a picture of some of the starting lineup Jaguar memorabilia from 1998 that he picked up at a Canadian flea market back in the day. John, check that out. You've got the starting lineup, Mark Brunell, card. They've come a long way, let me say, by the way, with the depictions, the more realistic depictions of these guys. That is a very awkward throwing angle, I think, for Mark Brunell on that. And there's also a Tony Boselli, who's down in a three-point stance with his head down, leading with the crown of his head, helmetless Tony Boselli, although it does come with a removable helmet. So got the both of those for $3 U.S., $5 Canadian. So that means the dollar's worth more than the Canadian Maple Leaf or whatever they have up there.
I think there's a plate of spaghetti down there is what Baselli's getting at.
Is that what it is? He's digging into the spaghetti plate? I've got. You have any like Jaguar memorabilia that you've fallen into over the years like that?
Do I?
Yeah.
It seems like I've got some... It seems like my wife has some Christmas ornaments from the 90s. I never really got into buying them.
Right.
I was coming for the newspaper. So
you were too much of a journalist to cross that boundary.
So I'm not a big Jaguars memorabilia guy.
I'm not a huge memorabilia guy, period.
My mother has one of the 94 logo sweatshirts.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like the not the leaping Jaguar? Or
the one that...
Did you see the original run? Somebody showed us. Remember the T-shirts, the first run of T-shirts that Wayne Weaver had commissioned?
Yeah.
We did this last year. We did a show where basically the question of the day was show us your coolest piece of Jaguar unique memorabilia. And somebody had a shirt that had been made up by some shop at the beach at Wayne Weaver. It was just like, make 100 shirts, right? And this is when the Jags first got issued the team. And they're the most hideously wonderful things you've ever seen.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they're wonderful in the sense that, wow, how have times changed, and this is a piece of of memorabilia that's rare. Probably not a lot of people have these, but just
now you'd have pre-planned with Nike.
It'd be a big rollout with the whole thing. Right. Nike would send you, chapter and verse on how you should describe these things and market research and all this stuff. I've got a couple of
before some guy named Ted on the West Side could roll out some shirts.
And that was it. And it was like, hey, Wayne Weaver said, go ahead and make these. So there you have them. I've got some McFarlane action figures from, I guess, the early 2000s when the Super Bowl came in here. Todd McFarlane came through with it, and he was given. I got a Fred Taylor and a Byron Leftwich. Maybe it was a little late. When might I have gotten those? If couldn't have been 2003. Maybe it was at a different Super Bowl, later Super Bowl. I seem to recall McFarlane coming through here on Radio Row, but I must have gotten those at a different Super Bowl. Not too high. I've got a Maurice Jones-Drew Pepsi bottle with his face on it. That's what I got. I'll put it on Facebook so you can see it. And that's how that'll come out. 641-1010 if you want to come in. Before we got to the James Sample interview, I mentioned a few of the comments from Robert Kraft in regards to the whole Deflategate punishment thing. Obviously, the NFLPA taking up the appeal on Tom Brady's behalf. Do you think that if the appeal...
Have they never not appealed something on a player's behalf?
Well, they should, though. I mean, isn't that what they do?
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's... Of course they're going to appeal it. They're the organization. You're a dues-paying member. It's their priority to give you... a good defense. It's like having a public defender, right? Mm-hmm. But you're kind of, you have them on retainer, so to speak. So I understand it. Sometimes we hear people say, well, why don't they just let him accept his punishment? Well, that's not the role that they're supposed to play in that. Let them defend Tom Brady all they want. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. The question is, will Robert Kraft, who's always been a staunch supporter, an insider guy, go outside the ranks and sue the league? Over the outcome, let's say Goodell hears the appeal, as he says he intends to right now, and the NFLPA's efforts to get him recused don't work because they say they want to have him testify, and he upholds a four-game suspension, loss of whatever was it, $1 million fine?
Yep.
First round draft pick next year, fourth rounder the year after that. He holds all that up. Do you think Kraft breaks ranks and goes after the league with every legal recourse that he has?
Will he sue the league? I'd be surprised if he sues the league over it, but...
I mean, outside of that, that's the only recourse he would have
if
the appeal gets turned down.
But from what you read, the blood has turned bad between those two over this.
He says he's definitely... at least his comments seem to indicate that he's considering it. Right, he's not going to rule it out at this point in time, which is probably the smart thing to do, even if you don't intend to actually do it. Leave the specter out there that hey, this is public leverage as much as all these leaks by the NFL, because clearly the NFL is leaking things on their behalf. The Patriots are leaking things on their behalf, whatever they think plays better with the public. And if you think that the threat of litigation will cause Roger Goodell to maybe go easy and reduce the penalty, then I think you leave that out there.
I guess there's no reason at this point not to have that out there. So why not be saying it? I'd be a little surprised. It would be so much not like what Kraft has ever done to be in a lawsuit against the NFL that was hanging over the league's head.
It would be, but at the same time, there's a guy who said basically 2 weeks ago, we'll accept the findings and whatever punishment comes down the line.
Sure.
And then
today
he found out that they're actually going to get punished, and he said, well, we're not going to accept that.
Yeah, and he's talking to Peter King saying, I don't understand how we got to a situation where Roger Goodell is the investigator and the decider on these things. Like, now he's talking out about these things, and it's like, yeah, the players have been saying that
for how long? For years.
Right, and now it's coming against you, and
right, so
you now the league is wrong.
It's always been the situation.
It's always been that way, right, but it's particularly come to light since Roger Goodell came in as the law and order commissioner, right? And the players have complained about this pretty extensively, how it's an unfair system where this guy could administer the punishment and then rule on the appeal himself. I think that's why he left the Detroit Vincent to administer the punishment
right
in this case, so he could look like he was a little bit more independent and impartial in this circumstance. But I agree with you, Tony. It's just funny now that it's going against the league, so to speak, in the form of one of the teams itself,
yeah,
and Brady as well, that now you've got an owner realizing the perceived injustice of that setup.
And it felt like he was almost trying to, because we haven't heard the other owners talk about this, and in fact, what you're hearing behind closed doors is that the other owners are okay with the punishment that's been coming down with the New England Patriots and this whole thing. And it's almost like Kraft was trying to rally the other owners with some of the comments saying, you know, Roger Goodell has the power to do this, this, and he didn't say this directly, but he kind of insinuated, he was like, it's me this time. You know, it can be one of the other 32 next time. Because certainly the Saints feel like they may have been victimized in this a little bit a couple years ago with Bounty Gate, and now it's the Patriots, who are an organization that have won 4 Super Bowls in the last, you know, 15 years and are on top of the football world, but none of the other owners are saying boo. You know, there's nothing out there that isn't saying the owners are supportive of what Roger Goodell is doing to the Patriots. And it's almost like Bob Kraft is trying to say, hold on a second, guys. Like, you do realize he's starting to realize the power that Goodell actually had and feels like his team is being brought down with no, as he put it, smoking gun evidence. Unfortunately for him, the NFL doesn't need smoking gun evidence to take you down.
I think it had, if this were the first gate involving New England, I think there'd be more sympathy from the other owners.
Well, yeah, I think there's a feeling, whether they'll put it on the record or not, that they've gotten away with a lot of stuff over the years.
Yeah.
You know, the radio communications, all that stuff that they've been accused of tampering with, that this is kind of their just reward. Yeah, it could happen to us, Robert, if we all went down the path that we think the Patriots go down, which is consistently not only pushing the boundary but stepping over the boundary of the rules. Let me get Bruce in here quickly. 641-1010 is the phone number. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. I think I have something that nobody has in memorabilia.
What's that?
Season 1, Game 1. Starting quarterback, autographed jersey of the one he actually wore in the game.
Well, if you actually have that, I would think you are the only one who has that, because they're only one of those, right? I mean,
I have it, and I can tell you I know it's real because he handed it to me.
Okay, when did Mark Brunell hand you his? When did Berline hand you his jersey?
Steve Berline and I were talking, and he said, let me go back and get something for you. He went back into the locker room. He picked up his sweaty jersey, and he said, here. He said, because I don't think I'll be here for long.
All right. Well, I don't know if you could authenticate that as being
the first. I can
bring it
down to the studio anytime you want.
Well, that doesn't authenticate. I don't know if you understand. I mean,
I don't have a letter to that effect, you know, that he actually gave it to me.
Oh, he did. He wrote you a letter. Did he wrote you a letter to that effect?
No, I don't have that.
Okay, that would be, well, look, if you're just keeping it for yourself, Bruce, thank you for the call. You don't need that, but.
You went after Bruce there. What about that?
No, I'm just saying. I don't doubt that that's how, I'm just curious.
Sounds
how did
like
you get
doubted.
The first jersey? Well, no, I mean, how do you get the, if I'm playing in the inaugural game in franchise history, that's a pretty nice gesture to take my game jersey from that game and give it away.
Yeah, Steve, I think Steve had that sense all season that he wasn't going to be long for this place.
See, he's not a big fan of the organization, I get the sense.
I wouldn't speak for him now, but at the time, there was not.
I don't know about right now, but I think over the years there's been pretty evident he feels like he was done wrong.
Yeah, I certainly think looking back, he came in and I think he thought this was a place where he was going to have a chance to do what he eventually did in Carolina.
Right.
And because Brunell came in and was the obvious fit and sort of took the city by storm, it didn't work out. But I'd be surprised if there's very much lingering resentment after 20 years.
All right, we got to take a quick time out. If you want to get in, 641-1010. We'll check in what's going on out at the J-Fund Charity Golf Tournament as well out at Sawgrass this morning. The drill on hand. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, and Fat Tony here with you. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continues Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here live at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, senior writer for Jaguars.com, Mr. John Osier. Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, and apparently only for the Twitter people today. I apparently didn't click post on the Facebook side of things. Oh, well. It just asks you about road tripping this year. How many, if any, Jaguar road games do you plan on attending, and which ones? Share your thoughts with us via Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and we'll take a look at that coming up. One thing that Tony and I looked at last week, John, the owners' meetings coming up this week in San Francisco, one of the topics of discussion outside of the Deflategate has been multiple proposals to change the rule on point after touchdowns. Move the extra point from the 2 to the 15-yard line, the snap. You're rolling your eyes as I bring it up.
I'm not big on the rule change. I haven't spent a whole lot of time in 20 years covering the league thinking, boy, they really need to change the extra point. It doesn't bother me the way it is now.
Do you think it'll change, though?
Yeah,
do you think
I do.
There's enough sentiment out there for it?
It sure sounds like there is. I mean, it seems to be one of these things that it's almost like, you know, it's the off season. You feel like you got to do something. Let's change that. You know, it almost seems like they're bored and want to change something.
Well, Peter King made the point. He said that he kind of measured the point from when you score a touchdown until the ball is actually in play for the next
first
game,
down,
right?
Yeah.
First down, ready to go, break in the huddle, right, and ready to play on the next series.
Okay, okay? Gotcha.
So he said, on average, just based on going back, and it's not completely scientific, but just the games he rewatched to see how this played out. It took about 55 seconds, I think, for the extra point, you know, to get the teams lined up to kick it, send it to commercial. Commercial breaks were like 2 minutes, something like that in there, and then another, I think, 75 seconds maybe if you assume a touchback, which they're very
sure. Yeah, they are.
Right? So from the point, it basically was about 4 minutes and change from the point you scored a touchdown until the ball is ready to play.
And that's assuming no timeout after the kickoff.
That's correct. Right. That's
which
correct.
Which you get a lot.
Which you do. They go right back to commercial. Sometimes they come kickoff and they go right back to commercial.
Am I not allowed to get coffee anymore?
Seriously, that was my thought. Is 4 minutes, is our attention span that bad now that we have to find a way to shorten this 4 minute period where we're having this little bit of downtime to use the bathroom, do whatever?
Again, they're going to change it. It's not going to affect my life either way, but I've been watching the game a long time, and it's never been a situation where after the game I've gone, man, they need to change that extra point. It really irritated me.
No, so, yeah, but it's almost because you don't think of it because it is so automatic, right? I mean, it's well over, it's 99%+.
Right.
That
it, game's pretty good right now.
Right. I mean, look, it's a
simple
play.
I've liked it a long time.
It's automatic.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make things, I guess, a little less automatic.
I get the point that when they first put the extra point in 1939, when this was all new, that's not the right year, but you know what I'm saying. When they first put this rule in, kicking an extra point was significantly more difficult, and you had a margin for error, and it mattered. So I get that the skill level of kickers, holders, the whole ball of wax has negated almost any mystery out of the play. So I get the theory, and if they want to change it, fine. I'm just not passionate about how they change it.
All right, that's one of the subjects that the guys on the drill discussed this morning. Tom Coughlin in town for the J-Fund Celebrity Golf Classic ongoing right now out at the stadium course out at TPC Sawgrass. So let's listen in what Dan and Jeff had to say when Coach Tom Coughlin, the first coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, stopped by today.
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Good.
Good night last night. Congratulations. Another great event.
Yeah.
The dinner was wonderful. The weather's great. You're going to 17 to plot down and go for it.
Nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Huh?
Right to 17.
What is the closest you've ever gotten on all those shots?
It was like 2 feet one time.
2 feet?
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
2 feet, but probably another X amount in the water.
Yeah.
You know.
Coach, you had a hole in one before? No. Coach made a joke last night that there's 120,000 balls in the water, and someone suggested he maybe put 20 of them in 20,000.
That's not fair. I mean, I just saw that great shot that I had.
We showed his shot. Yeah, we got on video last year. He had a great shot.
Yeah.
He
if he'd have tried to play golf and practice, he would have been good. Yeah, he doesn't have time.
Did you play last year at this? Did you usually get out down here and play around somewhere?
I come when I get down for a couple weeks in the summer.
Yeah.
I play.
You'll go play. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he'll get out there and play.
Can I ask you a couple NFL questions?
Depends on what the question
is. I want to ask you about Deflategate. Who cares?
Deflategate's great because it just puts you at a higher spot because you've won two Super Bowls against those guys. Yeah. I know you're
saying that.
I'll say it. About that?
What's all the hullabaloo about the extra point, Coach? Isn't it supposed to be a gimme?
Commissioner wants it.
Why? Don't you just want the free point? Let's keep it like it is. I mean, it's supposed to be a gimme.
Well, my question, a couple of them. One is, when do people go to the bathroom?
You know, correct.
Fair question.
Yeah.
And the other one is, we've worked hard to make that a safe play now.
Right.
In other words, there's no double push. There's none of this stuff. And the snapper's protected. So the idea of trying to make more excitement out of the extra point, my other point was, do you really want 7 or 8 full speed plays again? Because, I mean, obviously what they really would like you to do is go for 2, but I think we're going to stay at the 2-yard line. There was some talk in the league meeting
going
being
to
at
one.
The 1.
Well, I mean, everyone's going to go for 2, right? Don't you have to?
But then they started because let's say you're second up. You score first and you go for 2. Guess what?
The rest of the game. You're off track.
And then they get 8. Or, you know, depending on how many scores, full speed. Do we need more full speed plays? I mean, we got to play 16 games at, you know, 70 some snaps a game as it is.
Well, so then you'd then have to factor in a whole bunch of, you'd have to have a chart guy again, you know, what do we do here, you know, and those type of things.
I've always thought that
it's a lot to keep going on.
I've always thought that the hard part is driving the ball 68 yards and scoring, and then you can change the whole outcome, all that hard work. Because
what you're going to see is they're going to move the ball back, and you won't even know it until December. I mean, it's line up, kick the ball, boom.
Right.
But if it becomes something more, which means to entice you to run for 2 or whatever, the talk at the meeting by the coaches was, well, that means that if they put the ball inside the 2, everybody's going to hire a running quarterback, run the ball on the goal line with a quarterback, you know, just like you do in college, you know, the down the line option or whatever you want to do, weak side option. You get back into 3 backs in the backfield again and all that stuff. But it remains to be seen. Do we need more excitement? Not in my opinion. No. However, it's the commissioner and he wants it. And guess what?
Yeah,
we got it.
Tell us about your football team.
You know, we're really excited about the draft. We've got the young guys in there now and working with the veteran players. And, you know, we're excited about Victor Cruz, who was here last night.
Yeah.
He's now, you know, maneuvering and running some routes and stuff like that.
Well, what a tandem that's going to be.
Get those 2 guys healthy. That'd be pretty.
Get them healthy.
Of course, now you have the Madden curse to deal with, Coach. I don't know if you know that. The cover boys on Madden bring hard times.
Somebody sent me that one. I don't know how he got to that spot. I'm hoping, you know, I'm on John's committee. You know, and I haven't never said a word to John about that, about his game, but there you go.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Coach, you've been doing this for 20 years, man. It was a nice
great
celebration
season
last night, but
it really was.
I think what I liked, too, was the stories that were interweaved or woven. Thank you. Into the night. And these kids, we had some young kids here, you know, even still battling cancer, and they introduced them, and they come down and they get standing ovations, and there's smiles
on
their faces.
That's incredible, isn't it? To have everyone jump up.
Yeah.
Here these kids have, you know, have
been through hell. Been through hell.
Been through hell. And here comes, you know, down, and the little girl.
Yeah.
She was beautiful, wasn't she? Beautiful. No hair.
And then they have scholarship winners. So some of these, you know, they've been around long enough now that you'll see a kid who maybe 15 years ago was 6 or 7 years old.
I love the radiothon days and dealing with the folks that come in the studio and really telling their stories in the vignettes that
we
play.
You know what the greatest thing about the J-Fund is, in my opinion, is that I've never met a family who hasn't raved about your organization. And I mean raved, and how grateful they are for everything that you do.
No bureaucracy.
Yeah.
You know, it's really our system, our team here in Jacksonville is superb because we go right from the doctors to the social workers, and the social workers are in control of recommendations, and we've never turned any family down, ever.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And again, I still say the greatest compliment anybody's ever given me is one parent that said, you know, we've applied for all kinds of help, and we tried and tried and tried, and we never heard from some, but we never, we appealed to the J Fund. The next day we got a check.
Yeah.
That's the best I can do.
Well, congratulations. It's been a
thank you.
Great 20 years.
You better find you some shade out there on 70. It's going to get hot today.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice and warm.
Yeah. I need you to
lather up.
I want to hear some good stories from 17 today. I want you.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel?
How do you
feel good?
Last year I started out, I was like 6 of the first 8.
Uh-huh. You know, on the green.
Yeah, and then it slides. That tree over there, to the right? Tree is not safe.
No. You know? I can hit that tree.
I've hit that tree.
Yeah.
I've hit a few shots.
Just channel your inner Ricky Fowler, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I'll tell you what, if I could hit one on 16 that was supposed to go that way and went that way,
that helps.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that helps. Helps to get the breaks, for
11
sure.
11 strokes and 4 holes.
Oh,
well,
that's great.
Coach, thanks for all you do here in town.
Yeah,
I mean, it does not go unnoticed.
Thanks for your
support. Have fun out there today, and good luck with the football season as well.
Yeah, you and Brian were great last time.
Well, thank you.
Great stuff.
It was
excellent. Great stuff.
Easy to do.
All right,
Coach.
There he goes, Tom Coughlin.
Thank you, guys.
All right, they always like to highlight what TC's doing with the J Fund, and we always like to encourage you, if you are so inclined, to make a donation, tcjfund.org on the web, and God forbid you ever need their services. They've been an amazing resource for a lot of families here on the First Coast. Football-wise, we were just talking about the extra point. He said in terms of the extra point change that may be looming, Tom Coughlin said, it's what the commissioner wants.
Yep.
We were discussing that earlier off the air. You pointed to instant replay being something that Paul Tagliabue wanted. What is it about Roger Goodell that would make him want to change the extra point? What is it, just tinkering to try to perfect the craft, or do you think this is there's some in ownership that have kind of emboldened him to go down this path? What do you think it is?
I don't know exactly why an argument could be made, and I'm sure the players will make this at some point. You know, when you're in a league pushing for safety, which is what the push is right now with the rules on defenseless receivers, et cetera, Tom mentioned it several times, all of a sudden you're adding full speed plays.
If you're in fact increasing 2-point conversion attempts.
Which is what they want.
Right.
If you're putting these rules in, then what you're wanting is to increase 2-point conversion attempts, I would think, because a 33-yard field goal, while more difficult, with apologies to Josh Scobie, is not the most exciting play.
Sure.
So you're wanting more 2-point conversions. And that's a high-speed play. That it's same reason they've tried to, you know, you always see rules trying to minimize kickoffs, minimize onside kicks. All those are dangerous plays. So it's a little curious that you go after this, but if you're doing whatever you can to make the game more exciting for television, which must be what this is, then that has to be the MO for it, or the motivation for it. In the 90s, Tagliabue pushed hard for instant replay because he felt like it needed to be done. And this sounds like Rogers, you know, soapbox or goal, or if it's his legacy, that's a pretty small
legacy. I doubt that will be right. I think he's working on his legacy for good or bad
in
other areas.
Sometimes when the commissioner wants one of these, that handshake is pretty powerful.
And you hear Tom Coughlin say pretty matter-of-factly, well, he doesn't think it's going to go to the one-yard line. You know, so these guys talk. They kind of, I probably have a feeling on the pulse of the league and where things are headed. He seems to think it will move the kickoff, or the extra point will be moved back to snap to the 15, making it a 33-yard field goal attempt in essence.
And that makes more sense, Mike, because there is a tendency, especially among people on the competition committee who are influential people, you don't want to completely change the dynamic of the game. Moving the extra point back makes the kick more difficult, but it doesn't throw in where you're going for 2 every time. And there's a lot of old school people in the league who that feels a little that feels like you're changing the game a little bit more than moving it back.
Right, just the stress on going for two as opposed to automatically lining up.
You're going for two every time. Now all of a sudden your scores are, you know, 16-8.
Ah, who cares? If that's the reason, that's dumb. To me, if it's just, it's different than the way we played and it's always been the extra point, it's kind of a tack on type situation and the aesthetics of the game. I may not agree with the argument, right. At least I understand it. If your argument's gonna be, I'm used to seeing 14-7 instead of 16-8.
14-7.
That's a ridiculous argument.
I like 21-14.
That's a ridiculous argument. You can still get there, just,
I'm not saying it's their argument,
ways.
But.
I'm saying
if it is. My feeble mind, I like that argument.
If it is, that's a weak one. All right, coming back, we've got the fan feedback spotlight. Road games, how many, if any, are you planning on attending this year? Given an update as well, Bold City Cap texting with Tyler earlier today to let you know where they're honing in on tickets in terms of the Tampa game in Week 5 and how you can still get yours as well. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, tomorrow on Jaguars Today, making her Jaguars Today debut, new 1010XL Jaguars reporter Amanda Borges will join us in studio, Tony, in the first hour. Class to join up a bit, certainly, from the depths we've fallen to today.
Class to join up?
Just a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, come on. Have you met Amanda?
I have met Amanda.
Amanda will class to join up.
Yes, she will.
A lot more than yourself. All right, you're a good guy. We like you, but, you know. In terms of the class factor, you're kind of in Tony's range. I wouldn't put you down on my range.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
I'll take that.
Oh, man, it's probably a little bit higher on the totem pole in that regard than we are. Got this text in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Says them, I'm assuming saying people who make this argument, but them saying that increasing two-point conversions is just adding more full-speed plays is crazy. Like, what's the difference if a team scored after a 7-play drive or an 8-play drive? Just one play. What if you had one play, long passing drive, and the 2-point conversion would only make it 2 plays for the entire drive? Awful excuse. I don't think it's so much about any individual drive. Sure, you're going to have that. You're also going to have 15-play drives, and now you're going to have a 16-play.
Right. It's over just, the course of a season, yeah. You're adding many, many high-speed plays, and they're reluctant to do that.
Right. How many total touchdowns will you score?
It's the same reason they don't put the college overtime in. In the NFL.
I think that, what was the number, was it 59 three-point conversions this past season?
Something like that,
Peter King had in Monday morning quarterback, 59 total. So let's say that triples.
Right.
Which I don't think is inconceivable.
Right.
So you got another 110, 120 plays, so you're not talking about a ton more, but that's 120 more opportunities.
Right. There will always be people in the league who balk at adding high-impact speed plays.
Sure. So then again, Rob Gronkowski got hurt blocking for an extra point or a short field goal attempt.
Yep.
You know, so guys get hurt on those plays as well,
right.
Regardless. But I just wanted to share that one thought with you. All right, let's get in a couple of quick calls, and then we'll get a little bit of the feedback on where folks are going. By the way, Bold City Caps had nearing 1,200 tickets sold for the Tampa Bay game. Marching right along in terms of that. Gary's on hold with a question for you, John, it sounds like.
Oh,
hello,
boy.
Gary. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, John, I've always been curious, as a Dolphin fan, I see that the Dolphins only play one home game in Miami because they're playing in London in the first 6 weeks, only one time in the city of Miami. How does revenue go as far as what teams get as far as gate when they go over there, say the Dolphins or the Jags, when they play over in London? Do they get what is equal, to what kind of revenue that they normally would get for a home game? How does that work?
Yeah, if you're the home team, you get, now it's set up differently for the Jaguars because my understanding is that the Jaguars get more of their sponsorship revenue from that game than a team that's just going over there once would get. So it's a little different for the Jaguars, but yes, the Jaguars get their revenue as they would on a regular home game. I can't speak for the Dolphins because it's a different deal the Jaguars have because it's multiple times over there. So again, that's not a great answer because I don't know the details of Miami's, but I do know the Jaguars get great benefit from going over there because it's treated like a home game in the sense that they can get significantly more revenue out of that deal.
What do you, in terms of extending the deal, which Shad Khan obviously says they're in favor of doing, you know, continuing to play one game over there, you think next offseason is the likely time if that's going to happen, because you'll have still the one game left to play, and you obviously want to, you're not going to wait till it runs out to extend it.
I would guess you would hear some sort of an announcement next offseason if it happens. You know, every indication is that Shad and Mark Lamping won a home game over there, certainly beyond this contract and for the foreseeable future.
Anecdotally, on the break, went to Kansas or spoke with some folks in Kansas City on Friday. Just, you know, just general kind of whip around the league stuff. And the guy closes with, so in 5 years, the franchise will be the London Admirals, right? And I'm like, it's exasperating how
tiresome
it really is. Yeah. I said, I will bet you any amount of money that that is not correct. You go, oh, I'll take that bet. All right, well, then put some money up. All right, seriously. and I should call him back and put $1,000 on the line, or what have you. But it really fascinates me how, and it's died down a lot, because you don't see it written anymore.
Right.
But you're still going to get a Yahoo here or there who is convinced
that. But you don't see it written because you especially don't see it written by knowledgeable people within the league, because knowledgeable people within the league
realize it's not true.
See everything that's been going on here. And if you've talked to Shad Khan or people within the organization at all, then you know that's not the direction. So it's you never hear it in Jacksonville anymore.
Right. I think, you know,
5 years ago, you heard things like this all the time.
A local guy looking at it saying, well, they're playing a game there every year. They've won 9 games in 3 years. They're destined to leave. That's as much digging. I guess, but I mean.
Without any thought.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, if you're into saying things without thought, then say it.
Then keep saying them.
Yeah.
All right.
Which, if you were in another market, you'd probably say.
You want a piece of that action? You guys want a piece of that?
You'd probably say the same thing. If the situation reversed, you'd be that guy.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm saying the Chargers. The Chargers or the Rams or the Raiders look ticketed for L.A. There seems to be a lot of evidence to back that up. The fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you about road games. How many are you taking? By the way, go to BoldCityBrigade.com if you're interested in the Duval invasion of Tampa. You can link up to it right there, Tony. What kind of feedback we get on this?
From Kevin, definitely going to Tampa. Hashtag take over the boat. From Black Dog, been to D.C., Chicago, and Tampa. Looking forward to Tampa this year with the Bold City Brigade. From Ocho Fisho, 2, possibly 3, Tampa Bay and New Orleans, he lists. Duval Doom, definitely going to Tampa. Work, hashtag BCB, tickets already purchased. That's probably all this year. From Irish Jaguar, seeing as all Jags games are road games for me, 2-1 versus Buffalo in London and versus Tennessee on Thursday Night Football here in Jax.
Woo-hoo!
From Cristiano, in spirit, all of them, physically, unfortunately, none. Hashtag problems of being Brazilian. From Christoph, road games none, but 3 home games. Bills, Titans on Thursday night, and the Chargers. Not bad for a fan abroad, no doubt about that. Brian, 2, preseason at Washington, and then at the Ravens. From T-Mock, our crew is headed to Tampa Bay and New Orleans. From Paul, just 1, Tampa, live in Sarasota, so it's closer than Jack's. Wish I could do London again. From Eric, looking like only 1, the Tampa game with Bold City Brigade. From Ortapalooza, so far just the 1. The Tampa Bay game with 1,000 other BCB members for the invasion, and from the Duke of Duval invading the Tampa game with the Bold City Brigade.
Teal Apocalypse added the invasion of Tampa, of course, Jets or Ravens and New Orleans. That sounds like a guy who's checking off the list of spots he hasn't been yet, right? You're saying, okay, New Orleans, Tampa, and then either Jets or Ravens. I'll take one of those down as well this year. So, look, a lot of people expect to go there. 1,200 is what they're nearing in terms of tickets sold for the Jag fans going to Tampa coming up. What do we have coming up on Jaguars.com?
Well, first of all, it's going to be a cool weekend. I mean, if there's that many Jaguars fans going to Tampa, that'll be one to remember.
Best press box food in the league, by the way, is Tampa.
Tampa?
Yes.
I haven't been to Tampa in a long time.
Oh,
last time I was in Tampa was the Monday night comeback, Indy and Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been a while. Michael Bennett, I'm doing a story on Michael Bennett this week, and talking about how he's not as angry over the slide as you would expect, because he believes this is the best fit for him.
Dave Caldwell thinks it's a great fit for him, too.
And it's interesting. He's a very well-spoken guy, and has a lot of good thoughts.
All right.
All right, guys, with good thoughts.
We will look for that. We like him, too. That's why we're going to have Amanda Borges joining us tomorrow.
At some point, you'll have Michael Bennett on, and then... And my story will be obsolete.
Will be obsolete, yeah. Or vice versa. Right. I mean, one or the other.
Why
I just
even
won't
have
to
Michael Bennett on ever on this program?
We'll continue this discussion in the weeks and months ahead. He is John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Wild West Guns of Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming up next, XL Primetime. Stick around right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.